goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans? This is a big-time Victory Monday edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast. I am your host, Ross Uglum, publisher of the Bison Report on 24/7 Sports. I'd say there's a decent chance of how late this is. You're catching this on a Tuesday morning, but it is 8:54 p.m., making it still Victory Monday. And as Coach Richmond said at his press conference after knocking off ETSU, what a day it was to be a Bison. It was a long day, especially for those working in the media. But boy, it was something. Those were two really, really big wins for the programs that we cover, obviously being football and men's basketball, and a big, big Monday for the program as well. As for the second consecutive season, the quarterback has been named a Walter Payton Award finalist. Trey Lance is one of four finalists. We broke that news earlier on Bison Report this morning. Lance is joined, I believe, by Case Cookis from Northern Arizona, Kevin Thompson from Sacramento State, and finally running back Pete Guerrero of Monmouth. So obviously all offensive skill position guys. I'd love to make my case for Dylan Radins for Walter Payton Award winner, but nobody's going to listen. I think he's been at that level. But, if a Bison is going to win, it's going to be Trey, and frankly, an offensive lineman's never going to win that award. The Big Uglies get absolutely no love. Some more fantastic news for the football program this morning. Both offensive coordinator Tyler Roll and defensive coordinator Dave Braun were named to the AFCA's 35 under 35, so they're going to head out to a one-day conference with some of their peers, obviously, under 35 years old, and learn about the coaching profession, learn about a number of things. And just a great and tremendous honor for two guys that had some pretty darn big shoes to fill and have filled them excellently. I don't think you can really be disappointed in the two guys that Coach Entz tabbed for his coordinator positions. They have been excellent all season long. First, we are going to bring on our contributors. And for the first time, we have all three main Bison Report contributors in the internet space, in the ether here. First, I'm going to bring on Trevor Gebhardt, our football analyst. Trev, how are we living?
Living large, Ross. I had one of my favorite meals cooked for me tonight, so my tummy is very happy, which puts me in a really good mood.
Yeah, I had a weird day. I didn't have a chance to eat lunch until after Coach Entz's press conference at 2. So then my wife made lasagna. I wasn't hungry. Now I'm going to have 10:30 lasagna. They tell you you're not supposed to eat that late. It's a whole thing. Nate, how are you doing, buddy? We've got Nate Zasser on the line to talk about a season-defining win from North Dakota State men's basketball.
We're doing good. Good to see the football team win on Saturday. Basketball team got back on the right track with a huge win against East Tennessee State, who's showed that how good they could potentially be, and I think our team showed how good they could potentially be as well. I think we might have seen two really good mid-major potential tournament teams on Saturday, so looking forward to them to kind of turn the corner here at the end of the non-conference schedule before conference play begins at the end of the month. So,
and Trevor, you had a little riding on that ETSU game as well.
Yeah, so I have a coworker. He's in the marketing department. He actually was in sales briefly. He played football at ETSU himself. A little bit of smack talk going on the week before. I told him we weren't friends until after Saturday. And I told him we could be friends again since the Bison men were able to play like they normally do and come out with a dub. So happy to see those guys do well. Coach Rich said it well. Great day to be a Bison. So pretty cool stuff that I got bragging rights to down here in the South.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't tell him not to underestimate the Mighty Bison. That's usually the stock line from Trev.
Rule number one in sports.
So I just want to get on a real quick soapbox here, just because I don't think, and maybe part of it's my fault, maybe it's the rest of the media covering North Dakota State men's basketball. I don't think that people understand just how big of a win this was, just how incredible of a get it was for ETSU to come to the Shack. This was the best team. If you ask me, this was the best team that North Dakota State has played this season, and that includes Kansas State. And you know what? ESPN's BPI agrees. That was the 66th best team in the country. And that number, that 66 number, has dropped because of the loss to North Dakota State. They were ranked higher in BPI than that. You can look at RPI. You can look at all sorts of different metrics. That was an elite, elite level team that North Dakota State kicked their ass. I mean, that's what happened. They never trailed in that game start to finish. Guys, there are 353 teams in Division I men's basketball, and this was the 66th team. Here are some teams ranked right behind ETSU in the BPI from ESPN. We've got Oregon State at 68, TCU at 70, Georgetown at 71. That's Patrick Ewing's Georgetown at 71. Rutgers, Clemson, Virginia Tech, Western Kentucky, Penny Hardaway's Memphis at 78. Now, I'm not saying things would go like that, especially now that James Wiseman is back, but this was an elite level team that came to Fargo and got their teeth kicked in. Nate, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about how big of a game this was and how good East Tennessee State was going to be. I mean, their only loss was to Kansas by 12, which they were in it most of the game. Kansas kind of pulls away at the end, which typically happens to most teams in Lawrence. But they showed that they belonged in that game and that they're one of the top mid-majors. I mean, they won 24 games last year. That's really hard to do. And didn't win their conference. They were like the four seed in their conference. That's how good their league was last year. Ran into a really good Wofford team with Fletcher McGee in the semifinals of their conference tournament. They actually had him on the ropes. I actually thought they were going to pull it off. I remember watching that game just because I like watching championship week and finding those mid-majors that can upset someone, and they returned their whole team. I mean, it's tough to prepare for seven guys who average between 8 and 13 points, and they all kind of have their own style of their game that they bring to the table. Steve Forbes is a great coach. We saw that last year with how they handled the Bison down in, I think they're in Johnson City, you said. But yeah, you knew after that Indiana State game, yeah, NDSU came back and you thought that they kind of found their groove, but that's a game they wanted to win. And you know they had a tough week of practice there leading up to that game. And you could tell by the effort and energy from the team throughout the game that they knew how big this game was. And it was good to get that win.
We talked all week about the chance to, get the committee to take NDSU seriously in the event of a Summit League tournament championship. They weren't going to be taken seriously if they lose this game, in my opinion. You go out and beat Northridge and probably beat Montana State, and then you go out to Marquette and likely lose. Those games are, I wouldn't say set in stone. Specifically, I don't know if that Montana State win is set in stone, but you kind of get where you would be from a final record standpoint, from a what's going on standpoint. And I don't think the committee would have seen anything but a 15 or 16 seed from North Dakota State without this win. Now, you go play Marquette tough. You know, don't get killed by them. Beat Montana State, beat Northridge, and you're looking pretty good, especially if you go 11-5 or 12-4 in the Summit, which I think this team is absolutely capable of, for sure. And it it makes a huge difference as far as the capability of potentially winning an NCAA tournament game, potentially, which, you know, obviously is my ultimate dream. You become Cinderella, win that second round game and go to the Sweet 16. That would be my, like, literal professional dream, would be to cover North Dakota State on the second weekend in a regional in the Sweet 16. It would just be absolutely so much fun. They started the game by absolutely punching ETSU in the mouth. They were up 8-0. They were up 14-2 after the 1-of-19 start in Terre Haute against Indiana State. How big was it to jump on these guys like that, Nate?
And you could tell by the energy of the team that they were ready to go. They've gotten off to some really slow starts this year, and we talked about it in our preview on the podcast and in the article that they got to get off to a quick start. I think they're averaging like 28 points per game in the first half. And ETSU was giving up only 27. So it was kind of a tale of two different teams that didn't really favor North Dakota State in that aspect. So it was great to get off to a quick start, make them play from behind. You knew they were going to come back at some point, but for them to not even waver and give up the lead, I mean, they tied it at 14 and never lost the lead the rest of the game and got it up as high as, I think, 19 in the second half. So, I mean, it was just a really big time game. It was good to see the guys having fun. You could tell after a couple of the different plays, Witz's and one in the first half or second half rings a bell where everyone got kind of pumped. Tyson's dunk. You want this to be a whole team thing, and I think everyone's kind of contributed a little different, especially that game. So it was just a big time win, and like you said, you hit the nail on the head. That if it's between them and ETSU for a 13 seed, you give it to the head-to-head matchup. So, I mean, you're right. It's the difference between playing a top-level team as a 3 seed or an underachieving high major, mid-major as a 4 seed, which there's been more 13 seeds beating 4s than 14s beating 3s. So it's huge for seeding if they were to go to the tournament. ETSU is going to continue to win games. I mean, that's 66. It may have dropped now, but that's going to continue to rise when they're winning games this year.
For sure. You mentioned Tyson's dunk. I got to tell you, that was some senior. I mentioned this to you. I can't remember if it was you or who I talked to. I said the seniors have to give them more. They have to play better, specifically Jared and Vinny and Tyson. And Tyson gave everything you would want a senior captain to give. We're talking 17 points, 9 boards, 4 assists, and 3 steals. You can't have a more rounded out game in 34 minutes, I don't think, than Tyson Ward had, playing excellent on-ball defense. I was really impressed with him. I was really impressed with him from the beginning of the game to the end of the game, and I just thought that was a senior effort in a huge game. And specifically what I thought from those seniors was the punch back, right? So ETSU goes down 14-2, and then they come roaring back to 14-14. The Bison that I saw in the first month of the season, I would say probably would have folded up shop. And, you know, this team is better than us. We're not, you know, they're going to go out and maybe not blow us out, but we're not going to win this game. They're going to come back and set the tone from here on out. We threw our punch, and now they punch back. ETSU would not get tied again. They were tied at 14-14, and North Dakota State led the rest of the way. What kind of statement was it from this crew and this staff to take that punch back from East Tennessee State and just stay the course and really widen that gap?
You know, it's the type of punch that you would expect an experienced team to take and respond the way they did. It hasn't necessarily happened early on in the year here. So it was good to see them kind of take that punch and then step on it a little more. And I mean, they went up 7 pretty quick, and then it got up to 11 near the end of the half, up 8 at half. And they really kept the foot on the gas there in the second half. And ETSU really didn't have an answer. I think it was great that we harp on how many threes NDSU is shooting at a low percentage. They really did a great job of getting to the free throw line, and they are good. They're a good, great free throw shooting team. I think they're in the mid to high 70s last year. They were 26 for 30 this game. I think we talked about it earlier. If you shoot 30 free throws at home and make 26 of them, you're not going to lose many games. So I think it's important to have a good balance there of getting to the basket, getting to the free throw line. The threes are going to be there, whether it's late shot clock or inside out look. And they are good shooters. 8 for 21's better than they've been. I mean, if they shoot that every game, I think that'll be great. That's 38% as a team. I think they'll take that. So going forward, I think just having that good balance, get off to good starts, set the tone. They've been defending unbelievable. Only 25 points for East Tennessee in the first half. And a lot of their points kind of came late when they're down double digits, where you don't really want to send them to the free throw line and give them free points there. So you knew they were going to come back. It was great to see them take the punch and respond and keep it that way the rest of the game.
Yeah, it was absolutely huge. You mentioned the balance, 21 threes, 30 free throws. That's the type of team that NDSU has to be, because they do have guys. You know, Vinny can get to the rim. Tyson can get to the rim. Tyree can get to the rim. Cam Hunter obviously can get to the rim. Really, really excellent from, you know, all the way up and down. And the adjustments that were made as well, I think, were big time. Jared Samuelson heads to the bench, becomes a member of the second unit like he was as a freshman and early on in the last season. And I think they put their best foot forward from an athleticism standpoint and from an explosive standpoint with Cam Hunter and Vinny starting and playing together. Obviously, Edie was in the starting lineup, but I would not anticipate that being long term. Sam Griesel was out with an injury, which, by the way, just makes this win all the more impressive. There are plenty of folks that believe Griesel, you know, is one of the top two or three most talented guys on the team. But Cam has that length. I mean, he's 6'3", has the ability to guard the two if absolutely necessary. And Vinny is a great lead guard. And to play those two together with both players being able to handle the ball, both players being able to shoot the ball, I think it's something that needs to be seriously considered moving forward and is a great way to jump on teams like they did on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about, the slow starts – I mean, something had to be changed there. And I think you want Cam in that second unit for the scoring. But when you've been getting down to start games and kind of digging yourself a hole where you're using a bunch of energy to come back and then you don't have enough to finish it out, it's a lot easier getting off to that quick start. And I think Cam's kind of that offensive threat, athletic guard, can shoot the three, kind of lightning in a bottle there where he can really get it going. He had a great game. 3 threes, 14 points. That's the type of game that he can have, getting extended minutes. Jared's still going to be a great role player. You know, he's a good teammate. Just struggling a little bit right now, but he's the type of player that they're going to need this season. So I wouldn't count him out. He could be a great second unit guy as well to play with Vinny or Cam, whoever gets that break first. He's going to find his groove, and he's 45-50% three-point shooter when he gets it rolling. Hopefully he can find his groove sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and there's plenty of pop in that second unit. Edie is an elite player from an offensive standpoint as far as his efficiency. Malik Hardin-Hayes, our boy, the star of this podcast, young Mr. Jackson Notek, who got 3 minutes, but that's a complaint for another day. There's pop in the second lineup. They don't need to keep Cam as a part of the second lineup, you know, to make sure someone from that group can score. They have guys that can score, even obviously guys that don't start. Speaking of guys that don't start, I really thought Witz was great. In the time that he played, 10 minutes, which is, you know, enough to give Rocky a blow, plus you go small to end the game. Rock only ends up playing 29 minutes. I think that's really important to keep him fresh. And I don't know if we might have missed this in the news. I had it in there. Rock was the Summit League Player of the Year. Absolutely awesome against both Indiana State and in this game against ETSU. 7 of 9 from the field, 2 for 2 from the line. He had 7 boards and an assist. He was really, really excellent in this game. And part of that reason, I think, is being held to 29 minutes, and you can play only 29 minutes when Tyler Witz grabs a board, takes 4 fouls, which, you know, good for him. Sometimes that's what backup bigs are for, but he goes 3 for 3 from two, maybe takes an ill-advised three from the top of the key there. But you know what? That thing was halfway down. You know, that would have been a hell of a night if he would have gone 4-for-4 from the field in 10 minutes, played excellent post defense, and you know, gone right back down to the bench. So I was really impressed with Witts.
Yeah, I mean, he came in and gave some energy, and it's really nice. He's kind of that low post, back to the basket, old school post that's going to come in there and bang, and you can tell he did that with the four fouls. But sometimes that type of physicality keeps a team like East Tennessee out of the lane with slashing guards who are trying to get to the basket, knowing that they're going to be taking some punishment if they're going to come in there. But I've really been impressed with his skill set in that post, and he's the type of guy that, yeah, he probably wants to play more minutes, but if he can play 10 minutes to Rocky's 29 and come in there and give 6 points a game, I mean, NDSU is going to love that. Not sure if they want him to play more. The three-point shot, you could tell, I think it was the Cal Poly game, Richmond told him to shoot that. So I think he can shoot it, make sure it's a good one, but he's a great role player. He had some big energy plays. The and one is in my head where he kind of got the team rolling on that.
Yeah.
He's a good role guy. Glad to have him as a part of the Bison. I think he's a guy that's going to need to find some time here.
For sure. And you know, I think they could, honestly, if he plays like that, you could see, because I think they're going to do exactly what they did with Goo and Cruiser last year, which is they're not going to be on the floor at the same time unless something, you know, completely wild happens. They are going to try to play 1-5 at a time. And maybe we get to the point where it's 26 minutes and 14 minutes, because Witts, if he plays like he did on Saturday, I think is a guy that could earn, you know, 2 6-7 minute runs, one in each half, have Rock sit down. And I think that could be good for everybody. I think he brings something a little bit different. I think he has a little bit more back to the basket game than Rocky Cruiser does. Does he have that 3-point shot Rock does? No. Is he quite as athletic? No. But he's more broad. He's stronger. And I'm excited to see more from Witts for sure. We mentioned the free throw shooting. One thing that I want to briefly talk about too is you can sometimes, you know, in a game like this against a team like that, you can kind of poo-poo it and just say, wow, you know, the other team didn't play that well. They weren't all that great. You know what? ETSU shot 47% from the floor. They played good basketball. They shot at 33% from three. I would guess they would have liked to be a little higher. 82% from the line. It's not like ETSU, you know, couldn't hit water if they fell out of a boat. They struggled. And NDSU, you know, beat a team that was not playing terribly, and they beat a damn good team. And that is, you know, something we've been harping on all day long. So on to Northridge, I believe that today was the travel day. They'll get to LA and get some shots up tomorrow. And then they'll have, or I think maybe they practice today. Maybe tomorrow's the travel day with shoot around on Wednesday, but they've got Mark Gottfried's team. And Mark Gottfried, a lot of you might remember from NC State, was a coach that got in a little bit of trouble there, and they haven't been super impressive. Not a ton of excellent wins on that schedule, is there, Nate?
No, they've been really struggling to start the year here. Not defending at all. I mean, to start the year, they gave up 87, 97, 94, 116, 90. So, I mean, they really struggled defensively. They do have a nice win against Fresno State, who's usually middle of the pack to upper part of the Mountain West. But then they dropped one to Portland. Or they lost to Portland State. They beat Portland, played them the last weekend here. It's a game you want to win. Winning on the road is never easy. We've always talked about that. It's a West Coast road trip, different time zone. Got to get your bodies used to when you're going to play there. It's a game you want to win, but Mark Gottfried, I told you before the podcast, it scares me. You never know who's going to kind of come and play. He's going to have some talented kids, probably kids that aren't going to play very well together, but you don't want to give them any confidence. So let's just get off to a quick start in that one and take care of business and get home for a big home game against Montana State.
For sure. This is a game they should win. Road dubs are difficult. And out of conference, they went and got one in Idaho. They need to find a way to go out and get one at Northridge, because you're right, this team is not playing together yet. They need to go out and get that road dub. You know, the only thing better than road dubs, playoff dubs. And Trev, we saw another playoff dub, and the breaking of your record the breaking of the 33 game streak is now done, and the Bison have the record
at
34.
Yeah, that one's hard to see go. Obviously, a lot of work, time, energy, effort. My body still reminds me of that win streak every day. But the fact that it was another Bison squad kind of eases the pain by quite a bit, because I get a thorough sense of joy out of it. And just the fact that it was done within 5 years, I think, is the most mind-blowing thing. You know, that's something you think you're going to have for 20, 30 years, and it's gone in the blink of an eye. So kudos to that group, because I understand what it takes to get there. Our group couldn't get 34 done, so hats off to you guys. And just keep rolling with it, because the more you win, the further we all are from everybody else.
I really enjoyed my first opportunity to use the dramatic piano music too. That was fun for me.
That was good. That was a nice touch. You did good with that one. Wasn't expecting that.
the theme of the day, I think, from both the fan base and as we really found out from head coach today, not satisfied. Yep. They won a playoff game. Yep. They won by 24. But no one, I don't think, in that locker room or in the fan base is really excited about the quality of play from Saturday.
And they shouldn't be. And I, you know, as far as recapping this game, I'll probably be harsher than I need to be, like most, because there is plenty that they did do well. And there are points within that game that you can take positives from. And those guys weren't ready to play. That's just straight truth. And if any of them are listening, hold yourself and your teammates accountable like you have all year. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, okay, is it youth? Is it this? Is it that? Bottom line is they just weren't ready to play. And I think some of these guys, with them being young, they might think, okay, it's the playoffs. It's a new season. They just don't have that experience, and they just lose sight of what their task at hand is, which is you got to win your next game to move on to the next game. It sounds simple, but it is extremely hard, because it's human nature to get complacent, and you have to fight it every day. Not just every week, but every day, because everybody's going to give you their best shot. Everybody wants to see you fall except for yourselves. And so when you have things like your starting kicker, albeit a true freshman, getting suspended for breaking team rules, that's the sign of an unfocused football team. It may just be one guy, but when that's happening, it makes you go, okay, how many of the other guys are not focused? And we can speculate of whatever the team rule was, this and that, but the way they came out to play, you had a guy suspended from the team. There's miscues, there's penalties. They were not ready. And you don't need an outer body experience to go and win a national championship. You just go play and be yourselves. Because when you do that and you follow that process that these coaches and the program has laid out, it'll take care of itself. So, and you just turn around, you look at the scoreboard, and you find out how you did. So do what you know. The talent is there. The coaching is there. Everything is there. The bottom line is they did the only thing that can derail them from coming out on top and being on the stage in Frisco, and that was by beating themselves by not being focused.
Yeah, and so I want to touch on just one thing really quick, and that's that I was able to just on my way to record the BRTV post game. I saw Phoenix, and he was in high spirits, pretty much told me he was going to be okay, and then Matt Entz confirmed that at the press conference today, that if Phoenix had to go, he would go. And so it just looked like a shoulder thing. He came down hard after in breaking route, got knocked down and landed on his shoulder, and they just pulled him. And it sounds like he's going to be good to go against Illinois State. But, yeah, the kicking situation, this is what, you know, we know basically. Crosa was suspended for a game for a violation of team rules. Reinholds hurt his hamstring. Butler, he just started kicking real footballs, was kicking Nerf balls up until that point, rehabbing that injury, is going to kick extra points and maybe some shorter field goals this week in practice. But probably not ready. And it seems like Kroos is going to have to be the guy at least for one more week. But without him, it was a total gong show. I mean, Will Cardinal, and you know what? As Ants pointed out, Will Cardinal is a non-scholarship walk-on true freshman. He is more angry, more frustrated, what have you, with Krosa than he is with Cardinal. I think that's legit. I think your expectations for a walk-on, non-scholarship true freshman kicker should not be sky high. Kicking the football, a lot of FCS teams don't have one good kicker, much less three. So just a big yikes on the kicking situation.
Well, rightfully so, because you have your starting kicker who breaks team rules and gets suspended for a game. He clearly is not putting the team before himself. And it's hard to knock the kid, and hopefully he learned from the suspension. And kudos to the coaching staff for making a call and, making sure that kid is following the rules that the team lays out for you. And nobody's above those rules, no matter when it is, even right before the playoffs. So I applaud the coaching staff for making sure that they're following their book in terms of if you break a rule, here's the penalty. So kudos to them. And then it's tough for Will Cardinal to get thrown into that situation. I don't know when exactly, they put down that suspension, but I found out the first time he came out for a field goal. And so I can't imagine, whenever the suspension was laid out, that it was too far in advance of game day. So it's like this kid's not prepared for that. He's put in a no-win situation. And the poor kid goes out and does the best he can. He does make a 32-yard field goal, which tied his season-long that he had earlier in the year. But you got Griffin Krosa, who's coming back. He hasn't had an attempt since October. And you can slice it anyway because they're scoring touchdowns in the red zone, what have you. But he also hasn't – I looked at this like yesterday – so excuse me if I get it wrong, but I don't think he's made more than one field goal in a game since September, which I think was UC Davis. And so now you have the suspension. You have a little bit of woes. He is 56 of 57 on extra points, but he needs to come back and be focused all week because he put his team in a bad spot this week, and now he's got to come around and say, hey, guys, okay, I made a mistake. I've learned from it. And it is what it is. Nobody's going to be perfect. It's not to come down on the kid too hard, but he's got to understand, and I know he's a freshman, that this operation's much bigger than yourself. So it is what it is. You got to move on from it, and that's all you can do. And he's more than capable of getting the job done. So it's just tough when you put a true freshman walk on in a playoff situation and who knows how much time of mental preparation he actually had before the game.
Like to think I'm pretty plugged in, but I didn't know. I didn't know until Will Cardinal trotted out there either. And maybe I wasn't obviously paying enough attention to who was warming up pregame. But I'm not usually scoping out the kickers during pregame, so that's on me. I guess I can be better. Ultimately, though, they still won the game by 24 points. They still won a playoff game by 24 points, and they're back to the Elite Eight for the 10th straight season, which is kind of wild. To be honest with you, I think that's really impressive. The other thing, or one other thing in that game that impressed me was that reverse out of Delta. You've seen them run, run downhill where Trey kind of takes a sideways set, presents the ball, and the behind you tailback or the dot tailback takes it up the middle. You've seen wide runs, and you've seen the wheel route, the Chase Morlock play out of that. And they devised yet another way to run that play, which is to run the sweep or run the outside run to the field side and then run a little reverse off of that with Phoenix, which of course led to, QB1, Walter Payton potentially run out there lead blocking. Trev, what did you think of that reverse? And did you get a a little bit jealous that that baby wasn't in the playbook when you were there.
Yeah, the jealousy factor was high in that regard.
They probably would have ran that to Ryan anyway.
Not only that, but I was probably more jealous of the bubble screen that Kapora scored on because of how easy that was. And I don't know who threw the block, but that was tremendous. The wide open shot he had to crack.
Cole Jacob.
I mean, dude, phenomenal job because he sold the corner and almost made him think he was running an over route. He cracks the guy playing over Kaporis, and 42 yards, whatever the heck it was, he could have danced in there. But
yeah, I have no idea what 42, which is the guy that lined up over Jacob. I have no idea.
I've never seen that ever. I have never seen that. So I'm probably more jealous of that than anything because the wideout's got some serious love there. But going back to the reverse there, great call and great timing. And number five showed a leadership quality that you absolutely love to see out of your quarterback. You don't like to see it too much because of the nature of the situation, putting your body on the line. But the fact that he's able to do that without even batting an eye, and he said, this is what I'm going to do for my boys. Very, very high leadership quality play there. So it was great to see that out of number five. Not surprised, did not expect anything less. But nonetheless, that call was done at a perfect time because it swung the momentum into the Bison's favor when it was not going their way at that point.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And one thing that impressed me defensively was the two interceptions, specifically, so the scenario and Jabril Cox not being suspended for the first half of this next game is about as big gets. That was a pretty scary moment with that targeting penalty. But Cox is the call is reversed, right? Cox is declared eligible for the rest of the game. And I hope I can catch this on the TV copy. And I know I haven't gotten to it yet. It's just been a long weekend. But that TV copy, I hope they show the pre-snap because Hendricks is just imploring the far sideline set of fans to get up and to bring energy and just begging the fans for energy, and then basically goes from center field or the far hash or whatever to come all the way over the top of that 50-50 ball, over the top of that fade from number five, Dixon. Just an absolutely incredible, incredible play made by a senior. And I was really impressed specifically with the Hendricks. And it's not to say that, Tutsi didn't make a big-time play, but Jimmy Football, that was senior leader, All-American stuff.
Right, and I'm just going to piggyback off the one thing that you said there, and that's leader. Man, Jimmy Football made a play when they needed it the most. He understood the situation because he's been there, done that, and him being able to recognize that was a big moment. Even the way he celebrated after, you could tell that was pure emotion and joy, relief, excitement. You could encompass 1,000 words into that. But it was all released in his flex and scream. And speaking of jealousy, I'm jealous of his his arm structure because that was impressive.
He's an impressive athlete, man. I mean, to not only physically but mentally to understand that much about the offensive playbook and to be able to play four different positions in the defensive playbook. Jimmy Football might not be remembered for the level of guy that he was. Just a tremendous football player and one of my favorite guys to talk to over the last 4 years, for sure.
He's a great kid. I remember Kerry Woods, who's also a Bemidji guy. He raved about James Hendricks when he was getting recruited, when he committed. And so I had high expectations of him coming in. And I think he's made a position change or two. He's played like 17 of them. So, just very happy for that kid to be able to make that type of play. Regardless of what happens going forward, I'm sure he'll make more plays, but that's a playoff memory that he'll have from his last year. And those are the ones that kind of stick out with you as you get further and further away out of your career. So happy to see him be able to do that because that could be a career defining type moment for him.
Absolutely. As most folks know, 11 a.m. kick on Saturday, James Robinson in Illinois State is coming to town. Without Brady Davis, though, he shredded his knee. He's done. But you know what? James Robinson has basically put the Redbirds on his back and advanced them to the final eight. This is a question I asked Matt Anson. I'd like your players' take on it as well. 37-3 in their house. How do you remove that from your mind, even though it happened this season, so that you can focus on getting another win?
Play the first half of Nicholls State over and over.
That's
your most recent tape, and you got to protect what you put on tape. And I think you constantly remind those guys what not being focused can do to you. And, you know, Nicholls State, I don't think they got enough credit coming
wide
in.
Margin.
You and I both had the final score being, you know, 42-7, 38-7. And by hook or crook, it was fairly close. You know, it wasn't too far off. They got about, they got, what, six more points than we both thought, which isn't a whole lot more. But the way they got there is what you really want to focus on. And that the fact that they're not satisfied after that is key, because I've seen it 1,000 times. You go back and look at teams' playoff runs, not necessarily NDSU's, but any team in any level of sports. A team that can survive the first round, that is sometimes a favorite, they roll after that, because it's that refocus game. It's that wake-up call, and it happens all the time. So good, bad, and different, whatever it is, you just want to take the positives from that and keep reminding them that, guys, you're not promised tomorrow. And Nicholls State had guys that could have potentially have done that. Now, it was going to take a miracle, and they were going to need some help from NDSU. In the first half, it was heading in that direction. So Illinois State, they have a dude, and I mean a dude, that is certainly more than capable of doing that to you if you're not ready to play. Now, I think they're too one-dimensional. But at the end of the day, you have got a guy that is capable of taking a team and winning a football game almost by himself. That's how talented James Robinson is. So you consistently remind the guys of that. That 37-3 was, what, I don't even know how long ago. It feels like forever. So, yeah.
It was a while ago. It was a very early Valley game.
Point out things on tape of certain players and certain matchups where Illinois State has improved. So I think doing that and just giving that constant reminder of, look at you and I in South Dakota State. You and I in South Dakota State played each other earlier this year, not even a few weeks before this last Saturday, and they got smoked by the Jackrabbits. I'm talking, I want to say it was like 38-7, something like that. And Northern Iowa comes back and plays South Dakota State in Brookings again, and they're not doing so hot at half, down like 10-3. I don't even know what it was. Yeah, I think it was 10-3, and then they outscored them 10-0 in one half, and now South Dakota State's season is done. Just because Northern Iowa outscored them by 10 points in one half of football, despite losing by 30-plus the first six quarters. So give them reminders like that, and using other people and other teams as examples. So a Valley opponent, it's any given Saturday. And I do think because of how this last game started that the focus level will be very high from here on out.
Absolutely. And we're obviously going to have kind of another episode this week that's going to be a breakdown edition for the big Cal State Northridge game for hoops. Then we're going to preview this weekend's game against Illinois State. Trev, I really want to thank you for your time, being an East Coaster. I know this is late for you. Nate, appreciate you jumping on the pod as well. And folks, we really appreciate you guys listening, especially if you are still listening this late in the pod. The number one way, guys, that you can support us in this venture is to become a VIP member over at Bison Report. And we certainly appreciate those that did that with the Cyber Monday special, with the Cyber Week special that we rolled out right after that. And we're going to continue to just reinvest that into what we're doing. As you can see with the expansion of our video program and the amount of content that we're getting out, sometimes 3, 4, 5, 6 on Saturday, 8 pieces of content a day. It's not like this is just going in my pocket, folks. We are putting this out there for the Bison fans. The more VIP members, the better product you're going to get 100%. Thank you guys so much, and go Bison.